It's showtime, folks. Welcome in Chase and Big Joe special Sunday edition. I'm Chase McCabe. No Big Joe today, but don't worry. We have a great fill-in and Adam Vingan joining us. We're live, a special Sunday edition at the Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar, the rooftop in downtown Nashville, just steps away from Bridgestone Arena as the Predators get ready for game number 4 later on this afternoon. 4 o'clock puck drop, so get down here early. You can come hang out with us. Jared Stillman will have Stillman and Company from 1 to 3 after we're done. So we're taking you all the way up to the pregame show, and then Max Herz will take over at 3 o'clock. So a full day of Preds hockey and a discussion with all of you. You can weigh in 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, what's up? Good to see you, my friend.
I'm glad to be here. Beautiful day here in Nashville. Should be a good game.
Yep.
Pivotal game. Predators need a win. Probably deserved a win on Friday night. Then again, the Canucks probably deserved a win in game 2. But yep, that's just how this series has gone so far. But yes, head on down. It's a beautiful day here. And enjoy all the sights and sounds before game time at 4 o'clock.
I feel like that this series to this point, and it feels like this should be game 8. I mean, but this series has been a heavyweight fight.
Yes, it has.
It has been, okay, one round goes to Vancouver. One round goes to the Preds. One round goes to Vancouver. You know, how will today go? But it has certainly felt that way. The intensity's picked up. Now they don't like each other. Yeah, I don't know if they liked each other going in, but now they don't like each other because you're 3 games into the series. So you got guys that are getting under other skins. And you're right, the Predators probably deserve to win on Friday, even though – I don't know. The vibe was off. The vibe was just off for whatever reason. And we'll get into some of the fan stuff and all of that later on. But it just watching them on the ice, something felt off. You know, once again, I felt like Forsberg was not as involved as he needed to be. Mm-hmm. The top line wasn't as involved as they needed to be. I know they got 30 shots on goal. You know, so do you credit Casey DeSmith? Do you credit Vancouver's defense? Is it a combination? But something felt off. But they were certainly in position all game long to win that. Luke Evangelista, who I think has actually had a pretty nice playoff, gets rewarded for all his hard work, scores a goal, makes it 2-1. And they had plenty of time, you know, to try and tie this thing up. Unfortunately, unable to get it done. And so Vancouver takes a 2-1 lead at a place where we kind of thought that the Predators were going to have their way. Coming back to Bridgestone Arena, it just didn't go that way.
Well, in game 2, the Canucks carried the play, and the Predators had 30 blocked shots, which was a season high.
Yep.
In game 3, the Predators controlled the play, and the Canucks had 28 blocked shots, which was a season high. So a lot of blocked shots, 30 for Nashville, 28 for Vancouver in game 3. I was about to do that math, but then I forgot about the other ones. Forget I did any math. But the point is, Nashville, 30 block shots in game 2, which was a season high. Vancouver, 28 block shots in game 3, which was a season high for the Canucks. So game 3 was the best the Predators have played in this series. I think that goes without saying. It was the closest to what we've seen from the Predators in the second half of the regular season. And when you play that well, typically you should win. The Canucks had 7 shots on goal at 5-on-5. 5-on-5 shots on goal in the game were 26-7 in favor of Nashville. If you have a significant edge in 5-on-5 shots on net like that, you should win.
Yeah.
But the Canucks did a great job blocking shots. Casey DeSmith was up to the task, and you know the Canucks were able to make the difference on special teams. That was the difference. The Canucks had 2 power play goals. The Predators went 0-for-5 on the power play. The Predators scored on the power play, their first chance of the series in game 1 in the second period from Ryan O'Reilly. They are 0-for-12 since. The Canucks are doing a good job of preventing shots from getting through to DeSmith on the power play. And the Predators' power play was excellent in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
They were, I believe, 27.2% on the power play once they came back from their all-star break slash bye week in mid-February. So the fact that they haven't been able to get anything going on special teams on the power play specifically you know, is a bit of a problem. They had multiple opportunities, especially in that first period, where I think they had three power play opportunities to take control of the game, and they didn't. And the Canucks took advantage of their opportunities. First shot of the game on the power play, JT Miller scores, and that's the way it went. So, I mean, the Predators, there are reasons to feel good if you're the Predators about how you've played, and especially in Game 3, but you're still on the wrong end of the ledger.
Yeah, and look, you know, I was hoping when we planned to do these special shows, we'd be talking about a win, Preds up 2-1. We're not. They're down 2-1. But this series is far from over. Like, this series, and you tell me if you agree or disagree, to this point has every indication that it's going 7. It feels that way.
It certainly does. The games, you know, despite what the scoreboard has said in games 1 and 2 specifically, it has been a tight series. It took 2 goals in 12 seconds from Vancouver in game 1 to blow it open. You know, the Predators had 2 goals in a short span of time in game 3 to take a commanding lead in that game, and that was an incredibly tight game in game 3. So yes, it does feel like the pendulum can swing either way at this point. But I would be concerned as a Predators fan if they lose today.
Right.
I think it would be difficult to come back down from 3-1. I know I've mentioned this statistic. It's not cool if you're a Predators fan, but it's an interesting statistic that they've never won a playoff series when losing the first game. They're 0-12 in 7-game series, 0-1 in the 5-game series they played against Arizona in 2020. But, you know, this specific team, it will be difficult, I think. If they go down 3-1, they would have to win 2 games in Vancouver. I think that would be hard. So
yeah.
This is not a must-win game, because the Predators will still be alive if they win. They'll be down 3-1. But it's almost like what we saw last night. Toronto loses to Boston. They're down 3-1 in the series. I think the Maple Leafs are going to have an incredibly difficult time coming back to win that series. I think if the Predators fall down 3-1, I'm not saying it's over, but I think it's going to be very difficult for the Predators. So they need to be on their A game today.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think must win is overused.
Except if it's an elimination game.
Must win. Yeah, you've got to win that one. But like today, I mean, today is definitely, again, I'll say the same thing I did coming back, you know, when they were leaving Vancouver. Coming back to Nashville tied at 1 feels a lot different than coming back down 0-2.
Yes.
Just like going back to Vancouver tied at 2 is going to feel a lot different than being down 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel like that they really, really need to do what they need to do to win this game. I'm curious of what the lineup is going to look like. Spencer Stastny gets hurt the other day. He's week to week with upper body, so he obviously will not be available. My guess is Dante Fabbro, but do you consider, you know, take aside everything that has kind of gone on this year, do you consider Tyson Barrie just because of the experience?
That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is, what is Tyson Barrie's bread and butter? There's alliteration for you.
Yeah,
Tyson Barrie's bread and butter, I said it better the first time, is the power play.
Yeah.
He is a power play quarterback. If you are trying to get better on the power play, perhaps you consider Tyson Barrie in this spot. I mean, I would agree. My gut would tell me that it would be Dante Fabbro coming in the lineup, just because Barrie has been on the outside looking in for most of the season. But if you're looking for a power play ringer, that's what Tyson Barrie is. I mean, he was the power play quarterback for the number one unit in the league last season. Now, of course, that unit had Connor McDavid on it, so everyone looks good when you're playing on the power play with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. But Barrie had a big role in that Oilers power play being really good last season. So, I mean, I think Fabbro is the answer, but if you're looking to get something going on the power play, I would consider Tyson Barrie. I really would.
I would too. And I'm going to be curious to what the Predators end up doing there, if they end up, you know, giving him a chance. With the forwards, we'll talk about this coming up next. And you can weigh in, 615-737-1025. Could there be other lineup changes that Andrew Brunette makes? I can make a case for it. There are some guys that just, for whatever reason, they haven't gotten it going. So I could certainly make a case for it, but we'll discuss that coming up next, and welcome your input as well. We're live today at Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop on Broadway. Chase McCabe, Adam Vingan with you, a special Sunday edition of the Chase and Big Joe Show here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Andrew, with the power play, I mean, it just seems like, are they doing something tactically that's throwing you guys off? I mean, some of the guys were saying they're just not moving fast enough, but is there anything their penalty kill is doing that's just stifling that attack?
Well, they're doing a good job, obviously. They're trying to kill a penalty. I think it's not been tactical, I don't find. Obviously, they're very well prepared. They're very well coached on both, all over the place. And there's, you know, they've done a good job. I think we've a little bit our year, and a lot of the times we get our pace gets slow. I think it's been slow all series where we're looking for something a little different. We maybe stick handling a little too often and said, let's move it a little quicker and stick handle when you have more time, you know. So little things. I didn't hate it. You don't love it. The results aren't there, but they've, as a group, have found a way in big moments to snap it around pretty good and get a big goal or good big momentum, and it just hasn't happened yet this series.
That was the final boss, Andrew Brunette, head coach of the Nashville Predators, back in a special Sunday edition of the Chase and Big Joe Show. Adam Vingan alongside me today. We're live at the Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar, the rooftop here on Broadway, 419 Broadway, to be exact. And we're taking you up to a special edition of Stillman & Company. He'll be on 1 to 3. And then Max Herz with the pregame show starting at 3 o'clock. So that was him on the power play. And we were just talking about that, you know, do you view it as, is it something Vancouver's just doing tactically that is working, or is it just puck luck or a mix of everything?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of everything. And let's give credit to the Canucks penalty kill, even if you include the final four regular season games. So their past seven games, the final four games of the regular season and the three games in the playoffs. I believe they are 25 for their past 26 on the penalty kill. So their penalty kill is humming along right now. This is not a weak unit that's suddenly finding some good penalty killing. They've been in this groove now for a few weeks. So the fact that that the Predators have fallen victim to that penalty kill is not a surprise. But as Andrew Brunette has said, when I think about that one goal that the Predators have scored on the power play in this series, it was a lot of quick puck movement. I think it was Nyquist off the wall to Forsberg to O'Reilly, or it might have been Forsberg off the wall to Nyquist to O'Reilly. But either way, it was very quick movement. O'Reilly was in a good position to shoot, had an open look at Casey DeSmith, and scored. I feel like when they're not playing well in the power play, they're a little too calculated. Like you can't look for that perfect play, and oftentimes when things don't go well, you sometimes look for that perfect play. And maybe that's what some of the Predators have been doing recently, but the Canucks power play has been in a groove now for a few weeks. So they've carried over their strong end of the regular season into the postseason. So they've run into a really good penalty kill, but this power play has been good for the past couple of months. So you hope that it emerges today, because that made the difference. If the Predators score one or two of those power plays in the first period, we might be talking about a different game. And the Canucks get their opportunities and they capitalize. So it's easy to point to that as the main difference in game three, which is why the Predators need to be better on the power play in game four.
So if you're Andrew Brunette, here's our question now. We know that Stastny is coming out. You're going to put either Barry or Fabbro in on the defensive side. Do you make some lineup changes with the forwards? Tommy Novak has not gotten it going. And he's even talked about that.
Yeah, it's a good question, because this is Tommy Novak is a good example of the eye test versus the analytics.
Yeah.
Because the analytics would say that Tommy Novak has actually performed well this postseason, particularly in terms of the chances that the Predators have generated when he's on the ice. They've had the better of play. That's what the analytics say.
Sure.
The eye test, he hasn't stood out. And if he has stood out, it's because he hasn't been making the same impact that he made during the regular season. So, lineup changes are always tricky in the postseason. You don't want to,
you don't want to chase it.
Right. Obviously, with the injury of Spencer Stastny, you don't want, you have to make a lineup change. But in the case of Vancouver in game two, Tyler Myers was ill. So they had to put in Noah Juulsen, and they put Tyler Myers back in for game three. So you have to be careful. I know that they've recalled Juuso Parsonen. That might be a play there if you want to play Parsonen with, instead of Novak.
I'd want to see Glass
or Glass.
Yeah.
Either one. You just have to be careful. You know, you don't want to upset the apple cart, so to speak. But Novak has not had the impact that you would have hoped he would have offensively in this series. And sometimes that happens when you're playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time. Now, the counter argument to that, to your point earlier, Chase, is that Luke Evangelista seems to have taken to the Stanley Cup playoffs like a duck to water.
Yeah, he has.
So it's different for every player. But I think Novak might be overthinking it a little bit. So, you know, Cody Glass, more of an experienced player. You know, Juuso Parsonen was supposed to have a more significant role in this team at the start of the season. You know, I do wonder if Andrew Brunette makes a change there, but I think you have to be careful about how you go about that. As you said, you don't want to chase it.
Our buddy Jeremy K. Gover tweeted this morning, lineup changes I'd like to see the Preds make for game four this afternoon. He says, out, Novak, Jankowski, and then obviously Stastny. In, Glass, Parson, and Barry.
Okay.
I'm not sure two forwards are coming out.
No, I don't think so either.
And do you put Beauvillier in that? Or I mean, I think he's been okay. I kind of like
– I'd keep Beauvillier.
Yeah, I feel like you're getting what you wanted out of Zucker and Beauvillier when you acquired them.
I think that if you're going to make lineup changes, it needs to be – you're taking a Novak – you're taking out Novak, for example, and you're putting in Glass where Novak was going to play.
Right.
You don't want to switch everything up. So, you know, does that mean you're putting in Glass with Jankowski and Evangelista? Like, just you're taking out Novak and you're plopping Cody Glass, and you're not putting Cody Glass and then moving somebody here and moving somebody there. I think that's too much movement.
Yeah.
Because you're. I mean, I've liked what I've seen from the Citizens line with Zucker and Beauvillier. Zucker's been good in this series.
Yeah,
Zucker's,
I agree.
Zucker has made. Has made some important plays in this series. I believe he has a point in every game, if I'm not mistaken. And here you go. Here's your fancy – well, it's not fancy, but here's your stat, speaking of Jason Zucker. He can become the sixth player in Predators history to open a postseason with a four-game point streak.
Oh, wow.
He would join Ryan Johansson, Austin Watson, Philip Forsberg, Colton Sissons, and J.P. Dumont. So that's an interesting –
there's a list.
That's an interesting – yeah. That's quite the list there.
Some of these are unlike the other.
Yeah, right. But I think Zucker, this is why you acquire Jason Zucker, and I like how he's played with Colton Sissons, and I think Beauvillier's had a decent series. So, yeah, I mean, it would be simply taking Novak out, if that's the case, and putting in Cody Glass, let's say, where Novak was, and not changing anything else.
Yeah, I used this term earlier. There is something to be said about chasing the lineup. And I feel like Andrew Brunette's kind of alluded to that, you know, when he's talked about it, that, you know, hey, I'm going to look at things. But you kind of go with what you got. And, yes, you don't have a lot of time for it to work, and so you might have to make some changes. But you don't chase the lineup because something that just isn't working yet. It's almost like using the baseball analogy that you got to let the pitcher work through it sometimes. And so, you know, while I won't be surprised, like, I wouldn't be shocked if Cody Glass is in today.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be shocked by that. If they took Novak out and put Glass in, that's not going to surprise me. And then, obviously, the defensive change that they're going to have to make. But I don't think it's going to be a whole lot.
No, I don't. You're not in panic mode. It's still a 2-1 series. If you were down 3-0 or 3-1 and you were making a move in an attempt to shake things up, you could justify that. Down 2-1, you're at home. You don't need to go crazy. You're gonna put in someone else for Spencer Stastny. You might make a change in forward, but I would not go crazy with the lineup changes. And
yeah.
I'm not expecting Andrew Brunette to do that. I'm just saying that in this situation, you're still very much in this series. It's not like you need to push all of your chips in, so to speak, because if you don't win, you're out. So I think keeping it simple is key here.
I agree. He's Adam Vingan, Chase McCabe with you, 615-737-1025. It's our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can call or text and weigh in with us, a special edition of the Chase and Big Joe show today as we talk about game number four. with the Predators. So overall, though, you know, we talked about this being a heavyweight fight. I don't feel like we have seen the absolute best from either team yet. Is that fair?
Yeah.
I feel like there's another gear for both Vancouver and Nashville.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there are players on both sides. There are key players on both sides who I feel have not made their presence known in this series. First of all, on the opposite end of that spectrum, you know, if you're asking me who the best player has been in this series on either side, hands down, it's JT Miller.
Yeah,
JT Miller has been the most noticeable player, especially for Vancouver. But he has been the best player, I think, on the ice for both teams, skater-wise. You know, the one, you know, I think Elias Pettersson has not had a great series.
Yep,
he's fighting.
I agree.
Quinn Hughes has 4 points in the series, all assists, but he hasn't been spectacular yet. The one guy I'm looking for on the Predator side who really needs to step up his game is Roman Josi.
I would agree.
I mean, he had 3 shots on goal in game 3. He had 11 attempts. He had 8 blocked shots. Eight of his attempts were blocked. So he had 11 attempts, 3 on net. When this team was rolling in the second half of the season, he was the catalyst offensively. And that's not a shock. He's been the catalyst offensively for years. But when the awards, when the voting totals for the NHL awards come out in June, and the voting totals for the Hart Trophy come out for MVP, there are going to be plenty of votes for Roman Josi for MVP. He's not going to be a finalist, but there are going to be a lot of people who put Roman Josi on their MVP ballot because of how he played down the stretch. He was outstanding.
Yeah.
And I just feel I haven't felt him in the series. And I mean, the matchup within the matchup in the series was going to be Hughes and Josi because, in my opinion, they are the two most dynamic defensemen in the league. And the way that they're able to carry their teams when they're at their best. And as I said, the Canucks have been able to get by without Hughes being that player so far. And I mean, and Josi, he has so much more to give. And this, I just think that if this team has any chance of not just winning the series, but going further in the playoffs, they need the Roman Josi who was averaging a point and a half over the second, you know, I think since Christmas, since they came back from the Christmas break in late December, he was averaging like 1.2 points per game. They need that Roman Josi. They have not had that Roman Josi in this series. And, it doesn't all come down to one player, but he's an incredibly important player. And if they're not going to get that from him, they're going to have a hard time winning.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll make the argument for Forsberg, too. I mean, you need Josi and Forsberg to be those guys.
At least, but yes, I agree. At least you had Forsberg have his game, too. He had that goal. He stepped up there. I thought that UC Saros bounced back after a struggle in game 1 and had a solid game 2. When the shots did get through to him, he was there to make the saves. But yeah, Roman Josi, first and foremost, needs to elevate his game. We know he can do it. We've seen him do it for a long time. But that point streak in the regular season does not happen without Roman Josi, and this team does not win a playoff series without him either. So I need to see more from him, absolutely.
We are live today at Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop on Broadway, 419 Broadway. You can come down here, and it's a beautiful view here on the rooftop. But they got crafted cocktails. Enjoy handcrafted cocktails made with premium spirits and fresh ingredients. Taste Nashville with our menu featuring Southern classics with a modern twist. All that and so much more at Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar. And again, we're on the rooftop. We'll be here until 3 o'clock. Later today, so come by and see us. Coming up next, there was another matchup that I was looking forward to with this series, and I'm curious of Adam's thoughts on that to this point. It's the Chasing Big Joe Show with Adam Vingan here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game with Adam Vingan in today's special Sunday edition live at the Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar. We're on the rooftop. We'll be here until 1, then Jared Stillman will take over and go 1 to 3, leading into Max Herz and the Lee Company Nashville Predators pregame show live at Bridgestone Arena. So I alluded to this. There was a matchup that, Adam, I was very excited about going into this series, and it was not the players on the ice. It was the coaches. Because you had who's probably going to win the Jack Adams Award in Rick Tocchet, and then Andrew Brunette, who probably should be second to Rick Tocchet for the best coach of the year. Two guys that played a long time in the National Hockey League. I feel like they think the same way. They're very, you know, they're players. They go at it like that.
Former teammates.
Yeah, you're right, former teammates. So I was very, very curious of the coaching matchup in this one. You know, I know Tocchet has more head coaching experience than Andrew Brunette does, but what have you thought about the coaching matchup to this point?
Yeah, it's a good question because I am not an X's and O's expert by any stretch of the imagination. But as you said, Rick Tocchet is probably the favorite to win the Jack Adams Award as the top coach in the NHL, and it would not shock me in the slightest if Andrew Brunette was a finalist. I believe he deserves to be a finalist. And, you know, I think that they've played off each other well in this series. You know, when you just look at the way the series has gone, as I said earlier, it's a tight series. In terms of the things that are important to winning games, I mean, for example, I mean, the Predators, in terms of shots from the slot that get on net, that's an important indicator of success. At 5-on-5, the Predators have a 26-16 edge in slot shots on net at 5-on-5 in this series. Holding your opponent to, what's that, 16 divided by 3, it's like 5-something. Five slot shots on net per game in 5-on-5. That's pretty darn good.
There's too much math today.
Yeah, there is too much math.
I was told there'd be no math.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that. but, yeah, I think, you know, when the Predators hired Brunette, this is taking in a little bit of a different direction. When the Predators hired Brunette, I was a bit skeptical of Brunette as a coach. And the reason why was he did have 75 games of head coaching experience as the interim coach in Florida a few years ago when they won the President's Trophy. And that's incredibly impressive. But he also had the team that won the President's Trophy, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the highest scoring team in the salary cap era, which is since 2005. He had a loaded team. It wouldn't have been difficult for most coaches to get a lot out of that team. So I was curious about whether or not he would come here with a less talented roster and be able to get as much out of them as he has. So right. He's proven me wrong in that respect. So, you know, Brunette, I guess this would have been his second playoff series. I can't remember how many.
Third. Because he had two with Florida.
Okay,
right?
So this is his third playoff series. Tocchet has been through the battles, man. Not just as an assistant, not just as a head coach, but an assistant coach. Remember, Rick Tocchet, an assistant coach for the Pittsburgh Penguins when the Penguins won the Stanley Cup against the Predators in 2017. So Tocchet's experience is lengthy.
I love Rick Tocchet, though.
He's a very good coach. He's a very good coach. And you could tell at the end of last season when he came in, replaced Bruce Boudreau as coach of the Canucks, they had a really strong finish to the season, so the foundation was there. So you could, nobody expected the Canucks to be this good, just like no one expected the Predators to make the playoffs.
Sure.
Nobody expected the Canucks to win their division and be one of the best teams in the league. You saw the makings of it at the end of last season when he took over the Canucks, and then he got off to a great start and held on. You know, they were a bit up and down in the second half, but they got off to an amazing start. So, yeah, I mean, there is no shame. There is no shame in losing a tactical battle with Rick Tocchet. He's a very good coach, but I think Brunette has proven that he is a good coach this year as well. So I think it's a fascinating matchup. I'm sure that's not the answer that you were looking for, but I would be BSing you if I was let's look at X's woes here and X's woes there.
Give me the answer that you feel is best. So, I'm good with that.
Yeah,
yeah, but I and it's interesting because I don't think people always think about your time as an assistant coach and how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Brunette obviously has gotten his as well. But, I think you look at New Jersey and the fact that they regressed this year, there's probably something to be said for Andrew Brunette being gone. I mean, that with some of the talent they have.
Yeah, for sure. And also Rick Tocchet behind the bench for the Coyotes in 2020 when they beat the Predators in the qualifying round in the bubble. So he's beaten the Predators in the playoffs before.
Yeah.
But, if you were to tell me that these two coaches in this series are the best two coaches in the league this year, I would totally believe it.
Yeah.
An argument could absolutely be made. that you're looking at the best two coaches this season, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And so now it just kind of becomes with, you know, no matter what happens the rest of the way in this series, Benjamin kind of leads into my next point. Benjamin on our text line says, just now tuning in, does it seem the team is looking for a perfect shot each time? I would think with DeSmith playing, you just put it on net as much as possible and make it a dirty game in front of the net. Has the size of the Canucks limited that?
That is a good question. I mean, I think to the DeSmith point, that's a solid point, because think about the goal that they scored to open game two. It was just Philip Forsberg throwing the puck toward the net. Anthony Beauvillier was there.
And he tipped.
DeSmith was going one way. The puck went the other. It was an early goal. It was good to get a goal early against DeSmith in general, but I liked the way it was scored. It wasn't like a pretty play. It was just a fluky goal. And I thought that's exactly the type of goal that they needed to score in that game early to get DeSmith maybe off of his game a little bit. You know, if you score a tic-tac-toe goal, a goalie can say, hey, man, this, you know, there's only so much I can do.
Sure.
On such an innocent shot like that, the chances of it going in were probably really low. Excuse me. That changes a goalie's mindset. So I thought that was an important way to score. But, yeah, think about the goals they scored, you know, Forsberg's goal, then Sisson's goal. Shortly thereafter, there was nothing pretty about any of it. It was just attacking Casey DeSmith. And Casey DeSmith is not, you know, your average backup goaltender, in the fact that he's not coming into the series cold, because Thatcher Demko was injured near the end of the regular season, and DeSmith started the majority of the games when Demko was out of the lineup. So he's had plenty of reps over the past month. So it's not like Demko's been carrying the load. This is not like in 2018 when the Avalanche had multiple, they had, I think, Varlamov was injured, and then Jonathan Bernier was injured. I think that was the other goalie. Yeah. So they had Andrew Hammond, their third goaltender, who won a game here, by the way.
Yeah.
But he had their third goaltender in. He came in cold. He did have a really good game in Game 5 to extend the series, and then they kicked his butt in Game 6. So this is not like that. DeSmith has had plenty of reps lately, but he's not Thatcher Demko. He's not an all-star goalie. I mean, Demko could be a Vezina Trophy finalist. DeSmith had a good game the other night, but he's not that. I think it is important to just get to him early, just like they did in Game 2. The way they scored in Game 2 was the perfect way to score to start that game against a backup goaltender. Yeah, they need that.
I agree with you. But the other thing, too, is, and I'm not saying that they have done this, but I feel like, you know, you listen to fans, like, a lot of times, you hear that, oh, Demko's out, DeSmith is in. Ah, we got this now. Okay, cool. They're going to their backup goalie. Just because they're the second goaltender, the backup goalie, does not mean they're garbage.
No.
You know, and Casey DeSmith, like you made an excellent point, he's not garbage. He's not Thatcher Demko, but he's obviously been good enough to win a game in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, we'll see what happens today, because I'm sure that that's something that the Predators have been discussing, you know, when they've been meeting and practicing over the course of the last few days, of, all right, here's what we were doing. This wasn't working. We need to change this. Looking at some of DeSmith's tendencies and all of that. But he's no slouch by any means. And so you have to attack it that way. So I understand, like, what Benjamin's saying is a great question. And as for the perfect shot, I do think they try to do that too much. Like, I see, you know, you remember this from the Peter Laviolette days, when the power play would be great, and then we'd be talking about what's going on with the power play, and it was too much cycling the puck, looking for Forsberg or Josi or whoever to have the perfect shot. I do feel like I see a little bit of that now.
Yeah, and that happens when you're not getting the goal production that you're used to getting.
Yeah.
And the Predators didn't have a lot of problems scoring goals in the second half of the season.
No.
So that's
up and down the lineup.
Yeah, that's natural. It's natural. But, yeah, I think with DeSmith, you know, when you have, like I just said, when you have a backup goaltender in there, a goaltender who has not been as tested, though he's been in the league now for several years, it's important to get to him early. Like, if the Predators, as I said before, if the Predators would have scored on the power play on one of their early chances, and I'm not saying that's a dagger by any stretch of the imagination, but it changes the trajectory of the game a little bit. So absolutely, I think it's important. They got dangerous looks on DeSmith. They just weren't consistent enough. as our personal text line blows up. Very clever, Jared, who will be here at 1 o'clock.
Jared says, DeSmith DeSucks.
Yes. Oh, God.
You can't help
That's the type of analysis you can look forward to starting at 1 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm coughing because I'm laughing so hard.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I think it's important just to get to him early. I mean,
put the puck on the net.
Yes.
I mean, it sounds so simple, but I mean, that's what it has to be. You got to put the puck on the net. You put the puck on the net, good things happen. And just like you mentioned that first goal in game two, that Forsberg's just like, hey, I'm just going to throw it on and see what happens, and it ends up going in. I do think that there are times where, and here's all the hockey analogies coming out, you know, you grip the stick too tight, all those things, looking for the absolute perfect shot, and it may just not be there. Just throw it on net and then let some of the guys in front. That's how they were scoring, you know, a lot of those goals the second half of the season. They weren't all pretty. Like, it was guys in the dirty areas just getting it done. So that's the kind of game that I think they're going to have to rely on today. And my guess is that's what you're going to see. I have that feeling going into this game that I did game two of the Predators are probably going to look a little looser. You know, maybe they seemed a little uptight to start, you know, coming back home, all those things. They're going to play a little looser, and my guess is they're going to tie the series up today. That's just kind of the feeling that I have, and that's the feeling that I've had with this series, that it's just kind of a back-and-forth heavyweight fight.
And as they say in the business, that's not a prediction. That's a spoiler.
That's a spoiler. Yes, Paul Heyman. 615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll talk about just the atmosphere coming up next, because Friday, there's just a weird day. There's a lot going on downtown. I thought the vibe was off just a little bit. We'll discuss that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, Adam Vingan in today, 102.5, 106.3. The Game. We're live at Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar on the rooftop. Come by and see us before the game. It's a great place to hang out if you're going to a Predators game. They have all the cocktails. They have live music here. Intimate atmosphere, whether it's with friends or a date night. It's a cozy space that sets the mood, and they have exclusive cocktails for a memorable experience. Come by and see them. We're live today all the way until 3 o'clock, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Here on this Sunday, a special Sunday edition of the show. Adam Vingan with me today as Big Joe is doing Big Joe things. But the atmosphere Friday and, you know, the playoffs and everything. I'm curious of your thoughts. I know it was a little different. Colby Calais did the national anthem, which was really cool. Didn't have a towel waiver this time, which I thought was a little different. You know, used to kind of seeing that. That's part of the experience is, okay, who's the anthem? Who's the towel waiver? Didn't have that. No more Run This Town. Changed it up. Now, I know there was the whole thing with the U2 song, and that was the goal song of the Canucks, and fans are a little upset about that. But, like, I've seen tweets and everything of everybody going, like, oh, the game ops ruined it, set the mood off, and that's why the Predators lost. Not going to go that far. Come on. Game ops did not lose the game. So game ops did not go 0-for-3 on the power play. So I'm not going to do that. But it did seem and listen, it took me an hour to get from the interstate to Bridgestone Arena on Friday. Traffic was an absolute mess because of the marathon and they had the streets closed. Obviously there's not much you can do there unless you move the marathon in anticipation every year that the Predators are going to be in the playoffs, which they've made, what is it, 8 of the last 9? So maybe that's not a bad idea. I don't know. But it is what it is. So it's kind of a late-arriving crowd. So things did kind of feel a little bit off. And I know talking to people that were in Vancouver that were expecting it to be kind of a Nashville playoff atmosphere of old, they just didn't quite feel like it was.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to – I remember – no, it was a different situation, but I remember games 3 and 4 in the postseason 2 years ago against the Colorado Avalanche. Now, they were down 2-0 in the series. They were the, you know, the heavy underdog. No one expected them to really make it a series, but it got loud when warranted. When it was necessary to be loud, it got loud. But it wasn't loud by default. And you're right. There were extenuating circumstances the other night because of the traffic. Look, I live in East Nashville, so I don't live very far from downtown. It took me 30 and 40 minutes to get from my house to the parking lot on 3rd Avenue just because of how congested it was downtown. And
right.
When the game started, there were empty seats, but it was because it was hard for people to get in. And it filled in. It wasn't like an issue of them not selling tickets or anything like that. But it does feel like it does feel different. And now the important thing to note when I'm talking about this is that, I'm not around as much as I used to be. I have attended, the game I did on Friday was the third Predators game that I have been to since the start of last season. I went to one regular season game last season, one regular season game this season, and then this game. So just three games. So it's, my frame of reference is from the glory days, so to speak. And, it was loud when it needed to be. But it didn't feel any much different than an important regular season game. I think Alex Daugherty made that point on Twitter, that it felt like the game against St. Louis a few weeks ago, which was an important game, but it was a regular season game. And I wonder about, there are a lot of factors into it, but I do think that it's important to change things up, and the Predators were at the forefront of a lot of really important game ops things. I feel like they were trendsetters in a lot of ways, and I feel like perhaps they've kind of gotten stuck in those ways, and they haven't evolved, since the heyday of the franchise when they were making the postseason every year and going to the Stanley Cup Final and winning the President's Trophy and all of that. So, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask, even though I have several years of reference to look back on, just not recently. But yeah, it's definitely not the way it was 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018. I feel like that's natural, but it's definitely not the same. The vibe inside the arena.
No, it's not. And without getting too deep in the weeds on this stuff, because I'm not in those meetings. I look at it from, I run the flagship station and I have to do what, we do, and we're doing special coverage today, and people might ask why, we just had a texter, why are you doing 4 hours into the pregame? Well, because we want to, because it's a big home game, and as the flagship Predator, the station of the Predators, I feel like it's our responsibility to do that. And there's a lot of people that are listening, driving around, that want to weigh in, and, especially when they're coming into the game, and so we offer that is because we have the airspace to do it. With them, they've been doing this for 25 years. I do think that there's some traditions that happen just naturally, like, using Run This Town, which was actually not a playoff thing originally. It was a regular season video, but it was the first year that Shea Weber was the captain, and so people remember it, and then they used it again in the playoffs, and then it kind of became the playoff anthem. I'm not in those discussions. It's not me to decide. I liked it. I personally probably wouldn't have changed it, but they decided to change it, and that's their prerogative to do that. And my guess is a majority of the people didn't even notice. It's the loud minority that, you always have to deal with. And so them changing the video song did not change the game. You can think it did, but it didn't. Whether there's a towel wave or not or what have you. Now, I will say this. I did see a tweet, thanks to Ricky for sending it to me. Taylor Lewan said, might need a catfish today. Can't say why. Can anyone get me a catfish ASAP? So I don't know what that could be alluding to.
He's hungry.
Maybe he's hungry. But at the same time, we all remember that moment, and you can't recreate that moment. Like, you can have him back, and you can have, maybe they'll have the new line and different, but you can't recreate that magic moment from so many years back. We'll always have that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the hard part for just like us as a radio station, when these moments happen of finding what the next moment is and creating the next moment, and that's what the game ops is trying to do, and it's an incredibly difficult job. So you have to have a lot of that. A lot of that stuff has to happen naturally, and sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, the U2 thing, I obviously knew where they were going with that, playing U2, maybe pick a different song. But I'm not gonna blame. I think there were a lot of different factors that went into that. My guess is, with it being a Sunday 4 o'clock, it's going to be an even better vibe.
Yeah, I would think so. And it, you know, if you want to come down here to Hank's Boogie Bar on 419 Broadway and enjoy yourself a few hours before the game, I'm sure many people will take advantage of that and be nice and ready for game four. But yeah, I think it's not. This is not an indictment of the passion of the fan base. At all. But
because I can tell you, after being in traffic for an hour on Friday, and you know, getting into the building because it was such a backup. You know, it was kind of a little bit of a cluster getting in the building. I was in a mood, and so at the beginning of the game when they were doing all that, you know, it just, I wasn't feeling it either. So I'm sure there were a lot of people that were kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, who likes being stuck in traffic?
Yeah, nobody.
Especially when it takes you 20 minutes to go like a quarter of a mile or whatever it is. Nobody, yeah. Everybody's angry. So marathon's over. It's Sunday. Hopefully you won't have a problem getting down here. If you're heading down here now, that's great because I coasted right in because we got here early. So get down here, enjoy the day, smash that car over there a little bit. You know,
have smash car.
Yeah, have some fun. But yeah, I think it'll be better today. But it's easy to compare it to what it was at its peak and be disappointed. But it's a different time. It's a different, you know, the organization is in transition, and sometimes that also extends to the fan base, and it's always it's up and down. So
yeah,
I mean, it wasn't ear-shattering loud like it was at its peak. But it was, I didn't leave that building thinking that Predators fans didn't do their part.
Right. And if you want it louder, if you want a better experience like that, then guess what? Then it's up to you. It's up to the fans. And I think the fans will take it up a notch today for game number four. We're live today at Hank Williams Jr. Boogie Bar, 419 Broadway, as Adam mentioned, just steps away from Bridgestone Arena. They got a lot of different things here, including happy hour specials. Enjoy great deals on drinks and appetizers during happy hour. Also, they're open late, so if you're down here on Broadway, if you hang out after the game, you can come in as well. And by the way, for all you influencers out there, they have great Instagram-worthy places for you to take a photo. And there are a few, including the backdrop of downtown.
Do people still say influencer?
I guess I don't know. I'm not cool, so I don't know. But he is Adam Vingan hanging out today. We're on until 1 o'clock, and then Jared Stillman will take over with a special edition of Stillman and Company. You can weigh in 615-737-1025. Chasing Big Joe with Adam, 1025-1063 The Game.